ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ततो यदि बन्धाद्देवदत्ता उपचिन्नति तस्मादपि विष्णुमित्रा इति अनवस्थितिः।
Tataha
from that
yadi
if
bandhat
from the government imprisonment or being beaten by the protector of the woman devadatta
person named devadatta
Upachinati
takes the money from him.
Tasmat from the person named Devadatta.
Api again.
Vishnumitra.
A person named Vishnumitra.
Iti.
Thus.
The riches do not stay in one place but pass from one hand to another. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Prabhupada. Stealing or cheating another person out of his money, the conditioned soul somehow or other keeps it in his possession and escapes punishment. Then another man named Devadatta cheats him and takes the money away. Similarly, another man named Vishnumitra steals the money from Devadatta and takes it away. In any case, the money does not stay in one place. It passes from one hand to another. Ultimately, no one can enjoy the money, and it remains the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The both riches come from Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, and the goddess of fortune is the property of Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The goddess of fortune cannot stay anywhere but by the side of Narayana. Therefore, another of her name is Chanchala, restless. She cannot be peaceful unless she is in the company of her husband, Narayana. For example, Lakshmi was carried away by the materialist Ravana. Ravana kidnapped Sita, the goddess of fortune belonging to Lord Ram. As a result, Ravana's entire family, opulence and kingdom were smashed. And Sita, the goddess of fortune, was recovered from his clutches and reunited with Lord Ram. Thus, all property, riches and wealth belong to Krishna. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 5:29, Bhoktaram Yagyatat Sam Sarva Lokamaheshwaram. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the true beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, and He is the supreme proprietor of all the planetary systems. Foolish materialistic people collect money and steal from other thieves, but they cannot keep it. In any case, it must be spent. One person cheats another, and another person cheats someone else. Therefore, the best way to possess Lakshmi is to keep her by the side of Narayana. This is the point of Krishna consciousness movement. We worship Lakshmi, Radharani, along with Narayana, Krishna. We collect money from various sources, but that money does not belong to anyone but Radha and Krishna, Lakshmi, Narayana. If money is utilized in the service of Lakshmi Narayan, the devotee automatically lives in an opulent way. However, if one wants to enjoy Lakshmi the way Ravana did, he will be vanquished by the laws of nature, and whatever few possessions he has will be taken away. Finally, death will take everything away, and death is a representative of Krishna. Om Agyatmirandasya Agyatmanjanashalakaya Chakshashramindrutamirana Vatsamashri Gurveyana Shri Chaitanyavarano Vishnam Saptam Yena Uttare Swarupa Vadamayam Dharachi Swavadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Thus far, in the forest of enjoyment, the merchant, as is explained in the verse of Krishna, the merchant is wandering around in the forest of enjoyment to get some rare items so he can go and sell them in the market and make some money. So Sukadev Goswami explains, further elaborates the different allegories and examples that were given in the previous two chapters in this chapter to Parikshit Maharaj, because Parikshit Maharaj asks Sukadeva Goswami to explain them further to him. So it is mentioned that how the merchant, when he enters the forest, he is plundered by thieves and rogues. And these thieves and rogues, Sukadeva Goswami explains, are none other than the thieves and rogues that plunder them. Are who are thieves and rogues? No, family members, wife and children are like tigers and jackals who eat the flesh. I'm not saying it. In the summary, the very summary of this chapter, he starts and says that family members, wife and children. You see, because in one sense he is right, because a man earns money that goes through very hard short days. Like he's burning his. Sweating it out, you know, burning his blood, and then using up all his energy. And then that money, he wants to keep it to himself, he wants to save it. But what happens? It gets taken away. Right? So yes, he has to utilize it for the use of his wife and children, because he wants to maintain a family. So it's like utilizing all the energy in your body to sustain a family. So that's in that sense it's true. And then he mentions that there are mosquitoes, they're herons, they're envious people who want your money, right? And then the government is waiting to extract taxes out of you, right? And there are certain social events that you cannot escape, like sometimes for a wedding you're expected to spend lavishly and you're expected to satisfy all your relatives and friends. So that's a huge, given an example of like, it's a huge mountain that the merchant has to cross. Like these, you cannot escape these social norms. You have to be a part of a, you know, as to be a part of a community, you have to do all this. So thus far, it's explained how the money doesn't stay with the merchant. And then coming up to this verse, then finally, Sukadeva Goswami is saying that it is not meant to stay with anyone, because opulence and wealth does not belong to anyone. It is not meant to be used to gratify our senses. So these thieves and rogues, who are there, they are our own senses. We want to save the money, but because of the strong senses, the need for the senses to enjoy the sense objects, then we are forced to spend money on the sense gratification. So then, that's why it's Prabhupada mentioned that Lakshmi is chanchala, she's restless, because she is not meant to stay with people who want to enjoy it for themselves. And if you see in this Kali Yuga, it's just the way it's progressing, that money is actually a means to an end, but a lot of Most people have made it an end in itself. To accumulate wealth and to see the bank balance growing has sort of become the goal in life. So you may need very little to survive. Basically, you just need the necessities to be met and a few comforts. But then it goes beyond. You know, we want to find more and more avenues of sense gratification. So when it gets to that level, then obviously it is not. We've lost the real purpose of it, and we're actually using it to just satisfy our greed. It's not the need, it is the greed. So then that's why, and then sometimes people also accumulate money out of fear. Because there is no dependence on the Supreme Lord Krishna, then where is the dependence? The dependence is on money. We think money can protect us. Wealth and opulence will support us in time of need. So we live in this kind of an illusion. So once there was a farmer and he gathered his cow to a tree. Now the cow was hungry, so it was near the fields, there was green grass all around where she was tethered with a rope. So she ate all around wherever possible she could. Now the rope that she was tied with only had limited length. So up until the rope could go, she stretched and she ate all the grass. And then she was pushing for more. Her neck was being strained, but she still was pushing for more. So she could eat outside that area, that circumference. And then suddenly the knot loosened a little and she could go a bit further. And then she again ate all around that rope, wherever the rope could go, she ate more. So this is how the human psychology also works. That we, whatever finances we have, we stretch ourselves to buy whatever we can with those, that kind of property, you know, that kind of car, and that more properties and more things and more objects of sense gratification. And then we also go for loans. We take loans from the government. So we're pushing, we're stretching, how much more can we extract? From where can we extract? So this is how we are, although we are tethered, sort of, which means that we have a particular specific occupation or duty. But what are we doing? We are trying to stretch within the limits of what we have, the finances that we have. We are trying to stretch ourselves to the maximum to get the most out of it. You know, and it is because of this greedy mentality that it is actually the statistics that say that 95% of the wealth in the world today, it rests with, it is held by just 10% of the people, wealthy people in the world. And it's a very dangerous number. But then it's because of the unlimited greed that people have these days. And then what? So how? It's constant planning. How can we get more? How can we attain more? Krishna also describes in Bhagavad Gita, Ishwaram aham bhogi siddho hambalvan sukhi. So he's trying to say that so much do I have today and so much will I have in future, and I have defeated this enemy of mine and I've gotten ahead of this enemy of mine and I'm going to be at this stage by this time. So constant planning to acquire more. With what end? Like Srila Prabhupada mentions, that when the mind is like Ravana, then what happens? Then the Lord will come as death, eventually everything will be taken away. So the Ravana mentality, what happens then? Everything is vanquished and Ravana makes a horrible end. So we have to be careful that we do not fall into the trap of trying to acquire more and more, much more than what we need. You know, in the very few, I think the very first, second chapter of Bhagavatam also it is mentioned, Kamasya Narendriya Kriti Labho Jivita Yavata. You know, and Srila Prabhupada mentioned that, you know, it's translation that life's desires should not be directed towards sense gratification or acquiring more wealth. One should only endeavor just enough to keep the body and soul together. And if we calculate how much we really need to keep the body and soul together, you realize it's very little. And we have a lot of time for devotion service, for Krishna consciousness, for reading the Bhagavatam. Yes, so in this way, wealth, it's intoxicating. It can be very intoxicating and very alluring to just keep getting more and more. But in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, we see that there are past sense of so many kings and they have the kind of opulence that we can't even imagine these days. For example, the Pandavas, they're most known to us, because it's recent, very recent history. It is said that their kingdom in Hastinapur was much, much more opulent than the heavenly planets. Demigods would envy their opulence and their wealth. And yet, it was so detached. So just to understand what their consciousness is. So, for example, if someone, if a person goes home, he's worked hard the whole day, and then he goes home. He is very hungry. So you work hard and then you get hungry. So natural. So, also when his wife is trying to, she greets him nicely. She puts a garland on him, and she's having nice conversations, sweet conversations with him. But he's like, just give me dinner, just give me food. That's what I need. Oh, this is okay, but just give me the main, that's what I want right now. So that was the mood of the Pandavas. Because they were like, okay, all this opulence, well, that's fine, but where is Krishna? There's such burning, the burning desire that to please Krishna, to attract the mercy of the Lord, that burning affection for the Lord, that they couldn't think of anything else. Nothing else mattered to them. For them, going to the forest or staying in Hastinapur as kings and princes was just details of life that were secondary, really secondary. For them, the most important thing was to be able to focus on the Supreme Lord and always longing for His association and for His mercy. And not just the Pandavas, and Kunti Maharani. Kunti Maharani also, the way she prays, one can understand how detached she was. And she goes through so many miseries. And yet, when she sees Lord Krishna, and then Lord Krishna is, okay, Maharaj Yudhishthira is now become the king, so he's now about to leave. And she actually is thinking, oh, well, it was better that we had all the suffering, we were going through hardships, because you were there with us, you were there for us. Because Lord Krishna used to even visit them in the forest when they were in exile. So in this way, Mother Kunti actually prays that, and then she also mentions there that Janma Aishwarya Shuta Shuddhi, Janma, good birth in a prestigious family, Aishwarya, wealth, opulence, Shuta, being learned, and Shuddhi, beauty. She says these are obstacles in the path of her bhakti. And one who is materially exhausted, can draw the mercy of the Lord. He says, you are a king and gochram, you can easily be achieved by someone who is done with materialness, like you're over the attractions of this material world. Nothing really fascinates you so much. You're just there to meet your basic needs, and then what gives you pleasure? The association of the devotees and the remembrance of the Lord. So in this way, Kunti Maharani prays, and although we do understand that Janma, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, these are the four goals of life. But Krishna warns Arjuna that don't just become fascinated and distracted by the flowery words of the Vedas, because they will tell you how to live a good life here. But what lies beyond, that is restricted, that is not mentioned in these flowery words of the Vedas. It is only in Srimad Bhagavatam that Vyasadeva is actually directly mentioned in devotional service. So, dharma, yuyu dharma, we need pious activities to get artha, money, opulence. Right? And with artha, we want to fulfill our desires, kama. And then we become frustrated because Lord Krishna has guaranteed that we cannot be happy in this material world. Right? So, we try to fulfill our desires, we again try and we try again and again, but we fail. We struggle. So it only leads to frustration eventually. So an intelligent person can actually say, okay, enough, this is it, I'm done with it. So that's why it is said that yes, we do need the basic necessities, and wealth by itself is not in itself is not an obstruction, not that being wealthy will completely stop you, but it may become a distraction. It may become an allurement. So, in this, because Prabhupada mentioned, and also it is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita in 6:41, where it is mentioned that, Shuchi Nam Simpatam Gete Yoga Prashto Vijayate. So Srila Prabhupada explains that a yogi who deviates or who falls down in the next birth, he next life takes birth in a family where there is either a wealthy family or in a mercantile family. So then why is it said that he takes birth in a wealthy family when it is a distraction? You see, because for a basic bodily maintenance, you don't need to struggle. That's why you are able to focus, you are able to use all your mental energy and your time in devotional service, in service to Krishna. So in this way, wealth it's like, how we say, fire is a good servant but a bad master. So we possess wealth, but don't let wealth and opulence possess you. So you say, for example, when someone becomes possessed by a ghost, then the ghost drives them. They have no control over their actions or their words. So similarly, when wealth possesses you, then you are not yourself. You are not your real self. You don't actually know what will give you real happiness. So you are misled. So we possess wealth for the purpose of using it in service of the Lord, for a purpose, because Srila Prabhupada is a very clear warning when he says that it is Lakshmi is meant for Lord Narayan, because she wants to be used in service of Lord Narayan. That is her only purpose. And if she is taken away, then he says, however, if one wants to enjoy Lakshmi the way Ravana did, he will be vanquished by the laws of nature, and whatever few possessions he has will be taken away. For death will take everything away, and death is a representative of Krishna. So this is very clearly mentioned, that wealth and opulence by itself is not wrong. As Srila Prabhupada said, we see that in his life he has used wealth and opulence in the service of the Lord. We don't need to go anywhere, but Srila Prabhupada is himself such a great example of how he was completely detached. And he used all the wealth and opulence in the service of the Lord, and he was able to open so many temples. And Krishna actually, who does Krishna give wealth to? Krishna proved it, when Srila Prabhupada actually first thought that he will earn a lot of money and then he will spread Krishna consciousness. But then the factory that he had, even that caught fire, even that was destroyed. And he actually had no money. And for so many years, he just wandered around with very little money or no money before he actually went to the West. And then when he completely, of course he's a pure soul, and then, but to show us all that when he even gave up all plans of first acquiring money and then preaching, he just directly started preaching straight away. That's when everything started to fall in place. He had so many disciples, and slowly Krishna consciousness grew in the US. There were temples and there were Rajyatras, and it spread in other countries from the US. So that's why it's mentioned in the purpose. This is the Ravana mentality. We have to be very careful of the Ravana mentality, because it's like the enjoying mood. We have to be careful of not getting into the enjoying mood, to own wealth for the purpose of our own senses and mind. You see, that's why it is mentioned that our senses are thieves and plunderers. We work hard to earn money. Srila Prabhupada says that the living entity acquires some money which he can use in Krishna consciousness, but he is forced to spend it on satisfying his senses, because the senses are so strong and he is not able to control the senses. And then the family members and their senses. So you're not dealing with just your senses, you're also dealing with the senses of your family members and relatives and extended family. So in this way, whatever wealth we have, if used in the service of the Lord, then life is divine. Then it makes sense and everything falls into place. And Krishna actually says you don't need to worry about future and about what will happen, because he says our feed from the ant to an elephant, Prabhupada says, is fed by the Supreme Lord. They don't go hungry. And you're a human being, you've got a human form of life, which is so rare. If you utilize it for my service, what is the problem? You don't have to worry at all for it, And yes, sometimes there is a fallacy that Lord Krishna's devotees are poor, they are poverty stricken. But that is not true in the sense that they are actually materially suffering or struggling for money or wealth. But the Lord, He is our best beneficiary and friend. So He knows better how much wealth or how much opulence we need. He will keep all of us in a situation where He knows that in this particular situation, with X amount of wealth, with X amount of qualifications, X amount of health, we will be able to do devotional service to our best. Right? And when maturity grows, when He sees that a devotee has reached a level where that much wealth is not going to make any difference. Like, for example, Bali Maharaj, he surrendered everything to the Lord. And then what did he get? He got Vila Swarga for himself. The Lord awarded him so much more than what he already had. So if we become the servants of the Supreme Lord, what is there to miss? There is no dearth of anything. There can't be any dearth of anything. He is the Supreme Lord and He has all the wealth and opulence in the world. So that's why Bali Maharaj, when he surrendered to the Supreme Lord, when he was born, he didn't lose anything. Right? And similarly also, when it comes to wealth and Sudhama Vipra, he was such a, his condition was so bad that he didn't even have anything at home to eat. And then his wife said, please can you go to your friend, Lord Krishna, and he'll give you. He'll give you something. So then he goes, but then he wants to take, it's a tradition, you take some gift and you go and visit a friend after a long time, you take a gift for him, and he doesn't have anything to take for Krishna. And imagine he is the king of Dwarka now, he will say. And so what does he do? From a neighbor's house, he borrows some black rice, and that's what he takes in a little piece of cloth, he ties it and takes it with him, then he goes to Krishna. So see, in this way, when the Lord wants to give you wealth, when He wants to send wealth, it will come. But just as I said, for the Pandavas, it did not make. So just as, Prahlad Maharaj, Guru Maharaj Prithu. So this Srimad Bhagavatam is full of pages of examples of devotees who are actually extremely wealthy. Some of them rule the whole of the earth planet, right? So, and then Ambarish Maharaj. So they are there, and Ambarish Maharaj is actually aware of this, and he was actually very conscious of the fact because he knew that wealth and opulence and position can cause attachment and distraction. So he was doing his daily duties, but with complete awareness of what it can do to him if you didn't pay attention. You see, because as active human beings, with active individuals, we need some engagement. We all need to do some work, some service, some engagement. We all need to do our duty. Because when it is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, when we do our duty, then we become purified. So we should not shy away from doing our duties. And the purpose, the actual purpose of doing a duty or a job or work is to purify us. And then obviously you get some wage or salary for doing your service, your job, whatever. That's a secondary result of it. The primary result for devotees, especially to think in that sense, is that we become purified by doing our duty, provided we do it with the sense that I am doing this as a service to Krishna and I am not attached to the result. Right? So as long as we do it, seeing it as a duty or as a service, not in the mood of enjoying it, at the same time we see that the results are for Krishna, they're not for us. Then in that mood when we do our duty, then it has the potential to purify us. And the greater we have this mood and this consciousness, the more purified we become. And of course that wealth or the money, the wage that comes with it, we use it to maintain our families and we use it to maintain our body and soul, like Srila Prabhupada says, keep your body and soul together, that's how much we need. So that's what is specified. So then that's why Srila Prabhupada wants that, And Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhogeshwara Prasaptana, Vaya Pratate Sam, Verasatni Kamudhi, Samadhyana Vidhiyate. In the mind of those who are too attached to material sense gratification and material opulence, strong determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. See? So we all, even as practicing devotees, we must watch ourselves where we are going, how are we progressing, how like in corporate life, there are goals, right? Your managers or your teammates will ask you, where do you see yourself 5 years from now? Where do you see yourself 6 months from now? What are you going to achieve and how are you going to improve yourself in 1 year from now? So are we in a similar way? Are we, because see, that's a lot of planning. That means they expect you to do, they've got you, you know, really involved with what you're doing at work, right? So we should have the same mood and consciousness when we do devotion service to Krishna. It's, you know, it's not just sometimes life is so busy that we just chant 16 rounds, somehow we manage to get them done and that's all, really, that's all. You know, devotee association or reading Bhagavatam and doing some worship at home, that's, it's just not there because we're too busy. So simplifying our life and also having the same rigorous plan for progressing devotional service is more important than having those rigorous plans and where you see yourself in 6 months' time, in 1 year's time, what skills and abilities. So we can see, obviously, what skills and abilities are we going to acquire to serve Krishna? How much reading can we do in 6 months' time? How many books will I read in 6 months' time? And how many rounds can I increase? Or can I chant these extra rounds on Ekadashi? So this is, instead of, we've shifted the whole paradigm. It's a whole paradigm shift where instead of aggressively pursuing the material goals, we are very rigorously pursuing the spiritual goals. And this is possible with one greatest factor is association of devotees. Those who are already thinking along these lines and those who are already working towards the spiritual goals, if we associate with them, then we have like-minded desires. Sangat, Sanjayate, Kama. So we are with those devotees who also have these strong desires and are so enthusiastic about the devotional service, then we also acquire the same mood and consciousness. And that is what is helpful. Otherwise, it's very, very easy to just stay the whole life, have a very sedentary devotional service, devotional life, where you stand around and that's it. And then you can't get any further. And then if we stop, then what will happen? Then more and more material desires will keep in. And my Krishna say, Prabhupada says, very little room. Maya just needs not a lot of room, just a very little opportunity she sees, a very small opportunity to distract him, she will do it. She will just do it. She's just waiting there. Because Maya really knows all our weaknesses. She knows how to make us tick. So she will just look for that one little opportunity where we slip, and that's it, she's got us. So that's why Srila Prabhupada says, use all your mantra, vachan, your mind, body, words, and whatever your wealth and opulence and resources that you have at your disposal in the service of the Lord. And in that way, then intelligence will become strong, and then it will help you to not deviate when the allurements of Maya come. So I will stop here. Today is also the appearance day of Janaka Mata, and it is also the disappearance day of Madhu Pandit, and also the appearance day of Balasita, Lord Ram's concert Balasita. When I was reading this purport yesterday, and I was wondering, is it a coincidence this today happens to be also the parents of Manasita, and then in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is talking about her. He's giving her example that, you know, she's the mother Lakshmi and she was stolen by, kidnapped by Ravana. So I think we are all very blessed. It's Mother Sita's blessing on all of us that we have a reading about her in this very purport. It's like, I'll briefly discuss about just a few, it's very auspicious to talk about these special great personalities on their appearance and disappearance day, because then we get blessed, we get their blessings, and we can also say and pray to them to help us progress in our spiritual lives. So Janaka Mata is the consort of, she's the wife of Lord Nityananda. Lord Nityananda had two brothers, Shiva Sudha Devi and Sri Janaka Mata. So they are the expansions of Lord Balaram's two energies, Varuni and Devati. So it's mentioned that after Panchatattva, they left the planet when Janava Mata, along with all the other devotees at that time, Chamrinda Prabhu, Narottamdas Thakur, Vrindavandas, they decided to hold a huge festival in Kirkuri on the day of Gaur Purnima to celebrate Lord Mahaprabhu's appearance. So because they all left the planet at that time. So they all got together, and Janava Mata, she's known for her intense bhakti, that mode of bhakti. So she cooked very opulent and varieties of dishes for the pleasure of the Lord. And all the devotees, and she personally served all the devotees who came there for the huge festival in Kirkuri. And then they, it is mentioned that when Narottamdas Thakur was singing the Nam Kirtan, that Lord Nityananda and Chaitanya were actually manifested. They actually manifested in front of them. And all the other associates, they manifested in front of all these devotees who were having the festival of Gaur Purnima. You see, and here is something that I was thinking, you know, we chant and dance every day in front of the deities, they are there, of course, but it's to have them actually chant and dance with you. That is what these devotees could do. They have the potency to invoke the mercy of the Lord, and the Lord would actually appear in front of them and be, you know, with them. So, it is mentioned that Janava Mata was, she travelled to Braj Mandala, the area of Braj Mandala and Gaur Mandala extensively far and wide. And she was such a great devotee of the Lord, and she had such great compassion that she transformed many atheists by her compassion and preaching. And she was, wherever she went, she her mood was to give Krishna Bhakti to everyone. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his book Kalyan Kalpa Taru, actually offers special prayers to Janava Mata. And he begs her to give him shelter at the shade of the lotus seed. And she says, "You are the Shakti of Lord Nityananda, you are Nityananda Shakti, and you are the Guru of Krishna Bhakti. So please give me shelter at the lotus seed." So in this way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has special prayers made to Sri Janava Mata. And it is mentioned that Janava Mata, when how she left the planet was, she actually entered into the deity of Sri Gopinathji in Vrindavan. So that's how she left the planet. And Madhu Pandit. So there's not much mention about Madhu Pandit, there's only brief information about him in Bhakti Ratnakar. And he said that he was such a great devotee of the Lord that Sri Gopinathji used to manifest before him. And then he used to read Srimad Bhagavatam every day, and he was entrusted the worship of Sri Gopinathji in the temple. He had got the temple constructed in Vrindavan, and he was worshipping that deity. And then later on, Vrindavan, the great grandson of Lord Krishna, got another huge opulent temple built for Sri Gopinathji. And when the Mughals attacked all the temples in Vrindavan, then this deity of Sri Gopinathji was moved to Jaipur. And it is mentioned that this deity is from his shoulders to his waist, exactly the state looks like Lord Krishna. And it is still worshipped there in Vrindavan. So, and Janava Mata, constantly these two personalities are related. She actually visited during one of the aaratis that were happening Sri Gopinathji in Vrindavan. And it is mentioned that Sri Gopinathji came out of the altar and took Janava Mata and took her inside and closed the curtains. So that's how we know that she actually entered the deity of Sri Gopinathji. That's how she left the planet. And in the Lord's pastime, it is mentioned that she's Radharani's younger sister, she's Ananda Manjari. So then later on in that temple, Sri Gopinathji is deity of Ananda Manjari and Radharani together with Lord Krishna. So I think I will end there. If you have any questions, comments, corrections.
Who was Janavi Mata? Was she Varuni or
Devaki, I think. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes, I just go. Remember, you said that Janavi Devi was an enemy of Jai. And we have extended an elementary social expansion on Lord Balaram.
Like Krishna's parents, there are two sellers
for Nityananda.
Yeah, it is possible in the Lord's pastime with a limited intelligence and mind. It is hard for us to understand how two different personalities can be one person. But this is also true, you know, in Bhagavatam, when you read it and can just mention how, you know, two persons, because, you know, Mother, Devaki and Vasudeva are already the Lord's, always the Lord's parents. And then yet, when other devotees, other personalities desire to be the Lord's parents, then they come together with these personalities. So there's two of them in one. Right? So that's, yeah, it's hard to understand how they do it, but they do it.
We can say that Janamadevi is the energy of Nityananda, but sense is not common, shall we?
Yeah, because she's the concept of Lord Nityananda, yeah. Yeah, we can understand it that sense, but yes. Any other questions? Thank you, Grandchild Srila Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Janakai Gaur Premanand.